We asked, specifically asked New Mexico to please come up and talk about how they use their data to improve process. So maybe you remember Terry's slide where we talked about the two types of variables that we get in the case registry. One is, what do we know? And second is, how do we know it? So we have those individual based variables. Was the baby breastfed? Where were they placed? But we also asked, how do they know it? And you noticed that Pallavi mentioned CT scans. CT scans on infants as part of autopsy, because we ask a lot of questions, don't we, Heidi, about what was done. Did you take the weight of the spleen? Did you take the weight of this? Did you look at this? We have a whole bunch of questions that actually have to come from an autopsy report, because there is no standard autopsy for infant death. And so we don't know what's being done across the country. And this is a good measure. So New Mexico is a great example of really digging in and saying, what are we doing with our infant deaths and how do we improve it? Question in the back?
Yeah, when we're paying for the cath lab, who would pay for that? The state?
Who pays for the actual autopsy?
No, the CAT scan.
Oh, the CAT scan. So New Mexico's Office of the Medical Investigator, they are sort of like the gold standard in medical examiner's offices across the country. They train many residents, and the nice thing is once they are exposed to the practices and policies at New Mexico's office, then they often go to other offices beyond there when they finally go into practice. And hopefully they're learning from the best, and they're learning state-of-the-art standards. So Pallavi kind of exemplified here, using your data to improve the systems. One of the very last questions in the case report basically says, what else would the team have liked to have known about the autopsy or the death scene? And many teams will shy away from those questions, saying, we don't want to second guess our colleagues, our professionals at the table. And when I go out and do site visits, I really turn that around and I say, let me ask you this. If you had $1 million, pathologist, what would you have tested this kid for? And they're like, ah, well, yeah, I've got this wish list, like I want to do genetic testing, I want to do this, I want to do that. It's like, write that in there, because then that becomes data for you to say to grants like the one that, oh my God, we need more funding. We need more funding to be able to do a more thorough investigation on these unexplained infant deaths. So that was a really great example of how they use their data to improve the systems and the processes. And Lisa from New Jersey is going to talk about how they use their data to go after the SUID cases and actually try and do something about safe sleep. Lisa?
I don't know, Lena. I think I'd rather be there right now. It's warm.
Where is that?
That's New Jersey. That's LBI.
It is not warm today.
Well, it's warmer than here, Ms. Covington. Good afternoon, everybody. I just wanted to give you a little bit of history on how we look at our cases before I tell you what we're trying to do for prevention. We do break our categories down into three, the true SUIDs, and these are the cases of the unexplained. We're really not sure, is it the sleeping environment? Is it, definitely, a soft bedding? Is there a bumper? Is there a parenting, sleeping between the parents? We're just not really sure what may or may not have happened, but there's definitely risk factors that were identified. And often these cases are coded as undetermined SUID, and then there's some other variations. That's one of the things that we're trying to work with our ME offices, because some will call it a natural, some will call it undetermined, and we're trying, some will say accidental. We're trying to really get them to be consistent across the state. And then we have our SIDs. They get coded natural. We truly cannot find anything that would explain this death. There's the child's alone on his back, her back, in a safe sleep environment, and we're just really not sure what's going on. And then we have the positional asphyxia, and again, those are the sleep related, with the parents admit it, they have the bumpers, they have the pillow, they lay them down face down on the pillow, they have them sleeping, breastfeeding, or, dad's arm ends up over the baby. A lot of times that's our drunk parents. They fall asleep, they roll over on the babies. And again, our child fatality sits within child death. Our child death sits within Child Protective Services. So a lot of times we look at things a little differently than other people. When we get our cases, and we're really good about being notified about our cases, because right now every child that dies in the state of New Jersey, a phone call is made to Child Protective Services just to report it, not to report it as abuse or neglect, though they are getting better at saying we have no concerns or we do have concerns. And so our notification is less than 24 hours of the time of death. And what happens then is if they say, you know, mom was drunk, dad was drunk, they were co-sleeping, house was deplorable, we may code it as a CPS versus a child welfare versus thank you for the information, we'll forward it on. So when we're looking at our data, we have 469 cases. And we used the SUDI and went down by the manner and the cause, and then also we looked at the narrative to even narrow it down further. And if you look at our background of the 469, we have some outliers, but we average out about 62 a year. I actually reached out to Nick, my full-time employee that does all the SUI. This year, so far, we have 26. There are 17 cases out there in 2013 that could go either way. We're really not sure. We don't have the autopsy back yet. So our numbers are about consistent at 62 a year. Again, because we're located in within the child services, we're not part of Child Services. While I'm a DCF employee, statute requires the Child Fatality Review Board to sit in, but not of. So that's a little nicer because then if they want to say, well, we have really big concerns here, it's not Child Services saying, Child Services, you should do something. It's an independent board looking at it and saying, you need to really look at these safe sleeps. And that's going to be important in a few slides to remember that. We have a county ME system. We have an assistant state medical examiner in charge. He has jurisdiction over six counties. I'm really happy to say that is now eight. That's gone up in the month of October. We had Cape Atlantic go in under him. And what's nice about that is he's very passionate about the healthy sleep environment, and he's very passionate about consistency. So I'm hoping that our data will get even better. So we wanted to improve our partnerships, and we wanted to improve our data. They go together. This was my office last year, and what you see in there are death scene investigation kits. We had a training, and we invited all of the high-risk areas. We took our data, and we said, where are these deaths happening? They are really happening, almost half of them, in five inner-city areas. So we called those police departments. I called the captains. I called the chiefs, and I said, look, our babies are dying, and they're dying in your area. Can you please send police? If you come, I will give you a death scene investigation kit. They all came but one area. I thought that was pretty good. We gave them the kits, we gave them the training, and we said, you know, let's work together, let's try to find out more information, let's get better data. My hope was that if we had better data, then we could try, you know, even better prevention methods. And we did. If you look at our investigations, you know, our autopsies were 100% in the year 2012. Our death scene investigations, also 100%. The SUDI form is getting filled out 83% of the time, which is better than the 31% of the time in 2010. They honestly didn't realize people looked at it. I mean, they wouldn't even sign their names. I mean, and when I started working with them on the training, Brian Hoffman, who is one of the legal investigators, said to me, well, what is the number one thing you want them to do? And I said, you know what, if they signed their name, I'd be happy. It was a small thing, but at least then I could call somebody and say, what did you mean by that? What should I be doing with this information? Could you tell me a little more? We are still not happy with our doll reenactments, and our scene photos are better than they were, but we would like to get the photos. They're doing them, but they're not sending them, and that's a battle that we continue to fight for that. The doll reenactment, Brian and I just actually had a conversation last week, and he's like, well, why aren't they doing them? And my question continues to be, are they doing them and not documenting them, or are they just not doing them? So that's our next to find out, because we've given them the dolls, because before they didn't have them. They have them now. Why aren't they doing them? So one of the things that I liked about our data was when I started, every CPS worker had to be trained in safe sleep. Sounds good. All of our resource parents, which is what we call our foster parents, all of our licensing, everybody within Department of Children and Families got safe sleep training. Again, very important. I'm not minimizing it. However, when you look at the CPS involvement, it's less than 20% at any given time. You know, the highest being 22% in 2009. So my concern about that was, well, what are we doing? If we are spending all of our time, all of our energy, all of our focus on educating CPS workers, what about the other 80%? How are we training them? How are we reaching them? You know, and especially the great thing about it is we have better data now, because remember, every case comes through our 24-hour hotline, so they do get adequately screened. Our co-sleeping, we have improved the missing data on that, so we now know 54% of our SUID cases are co-sleeping cases. So when I was looking at, okay, so 20% is Child Protective Services, where are the 80%? What is going on with the 80%? The one thing that we noticed, a common thread, was Medicaid. So the socioeconomic factor is in there. We have 75% of all of our cases are Medicaid recipients. So that's where I want to target my efforts. That's where I want to go with prevention efforts. How do I reach out to the Medicaid recipients and educate them about, and we call it healthy sleeping in the state of New Jersey, and the reason we do is because it sits in Child Protective Services. Very judgmental if a Child Protective Service worker says, I want to talk to you about keeping your kids safe. Because again, now we're telling them how to raise their child. If a Department of Health person says the same thing, or a visiting nurse says the same thing, it's better well received. But because everything is coming through CPS, we use healthy sleep environments. So how do we get our Medicaid recipients to talk about healthy sleep environment? One of the things that I looked at was our middle schoolers. How do we educate? I tell the story when my daughter was in eighth grade, she did a healthy sleep environment. I mean, she did that, going ahead of myself, that egg baby thing where she had to walk around with the egg, it had to be babysat, it had to be, you know, and all these little things. And she had to do this whole project on how much everything cost. And there was bumpers in there, and there were, you know, bedding, and there was Tylenol and all this other stuff in there. And I was like, well, Jenna, you're not supposed to use that, you're not supposed to use that, you're not supposed to. But Mom, and I was like, no, this is, you know, the new guidelines. You're not supposed to be using it. Don't do it. So she put all that in her report, and she sent it in. She got a C. Mom, I told you, why couldn't I just put it in there? For, you know, to, and I was like, because that's not the right way. So I emailed the teacher the AAP guidelines and, you know, all the information on why we're not giving out baby Tylenol anymore. And I said, I'm just letting you know that the curriculum needs to be upgraded. She ended up with an A, and I ended up with a project. So what we did was we partnered with the Department of Health and Education, and we had an art contest. And we reached out to every middle school in the state of New Jersey. So the 6th to 8th graders in the state of New Jersey are babysitters. These are our older siblings. These are the kids who are going to be our babysitters and then someday our parents. So start the generation there of teaching them about healthy sleep environments. We gave them information on healthy sleeping. We have a whole curriculum guide, and this is actually, I'm really proud of myself, I uploaded this. All these handouts are in the handout guide for this conference, so if you want to download or look at them, they're up there. We said, all right, give me a healthy sleep environment poster. We will give you monetary prizes. They got Visa gift cards, and we went to each school at the end of the year, and we gave them a certificate as well as a gift card to thank them for their participation when they won. This started out as a calendar contest, and I liked the shower moment instead, but actually I was up at the New England conference, and Connecticut had a bag on suicide prevention, and I was like, you know what, a calendar's nice, but I don't think I want to do a calendar anymore. So the glory of the grant is I can just email Colleen and said, can I change this, because I really don't want to do a calendar, because that's really not going to do anything, and it's going to go away, and let's figure out something else. So we came up with the idea of a tote bag, and I actually brought it because I'm all excited. And we got the tote bag, and what we're going to do is, and the tote bag, we have our sleep sack, and it's from Halo. They gave us a really good deal on those. And then we have the Sleep Baby Safe and Snug book. And it was a challenge because we sent everything out to the schools, and we said, just send your pictures in. And, you know, with 300,000 students, we really thought, you know, okay, if we get 3,000, that will be really great, and we'll be really happy, and we're going to give these totes to our family success centers and our federally qualified health care centers and some of our Medicaid OBGYNs. So I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm going to get 3,000 pictures, and I'm so excited, and they're going to be really great. And this was the first picture that we got. Now think about from a child protective service. What's the first thing you see? You want to smother your child. No, we don't want to smother. And I was just like, oh my God, this isn't going to work. But, you know, this was our winning picture. And again, you see the healthy sleep environment versus the safe sleep. And we just, again, do that purely because it's not just the soft bedding, not just no bumpers. It's not just back to sleep. It's about no bed sharing. It's about the smoke. It's about making sure your hands are washed, you know, using a pacifier, all the different things. And so we do the healthy sleep environment. And we call it FIS, Practicing Healthy Infant Sleep Environments. And so we have 4,500 kids. This is Nick, my colleague who does all the data work and all the reviews, and we're going to put all these kits together. They're down in the basement of our building right now, and this is the day they came in. I was so excited. I was standing outside on the back with the big truck pulling in, and I'm texting Lena and everybody saying, look, it's here. You know, we get to put those together when I get back. And it's just going to be a ground effort. We're going to be putting them together, boxing them up, and hand delivering and asking them to please use it and please educate. Now, one of the things that I like about this is because when we bring different people to the table, we get a different perspective. When I first started, we had three people from one organization sitting at the table, and I think that was good when it first started out, but then it made it kind of like what they could do or what they could benefit from. So we kind of said, okay, well, let's look and see who's here. And actually, when Michigan did their reverse site visit a few years ago, the woman that was doing it at the time looked and said, why do you have the same people on there? You need to get a better team, better well-rounded. And we used that to make some changes. So now we have Child Protective Services on. We, you know, one of my biggest fears is in the state of New Jersey, if somebody appeals a child abuse finding, it can go to the appellate court. And I would really like the appellate court not to rule on whether putting a child in a healthy sleep environment versus an unhealthy sleep environment is or isn't child abuse. I mean, that has so many scary tones to it that I just would prefer them not to do that. So we have Child Protective Services there. We have law enforcement. So they see why it's important to hold the scene rather than bag it up and move it. We have partnerships. We have somebody from our visiting nurse program on our team now. We have the CJ Foundation. And we also, and I bribe them with a Diet Coke and breakfast every third Thursday of the month, is the director of Medicaid. So when I need something, I can say, Tom, I need fill in the blank. I give them breakfast. It's money well spent. You look at the attendance. Our attendance is improving. You know, we're getting people there, they're reading the cases, they're online, they're discussing it, and we're really starting to talk about where do we go from here, what do we do next. Nick isn't here because I think Nick deserves more than just a name on here. He has really taken the SUDI form, the SUDI committee, everything, and really has done a lot of great work, and I'm really happy that he's there, he does the work. My CDR unit puts up with us. They're going to help us, you know, put all the paper together. I promised them pizza. Our sewage subcommittee, we have the MEs on there now. We have a couple detectives from the prosecutor's office. And, Lena, I just don't know what I would do without her because, you know, when certain people and I battle, I can just say, what do you suggest? You know, and Terry keeps us all grounded. And then when I lock myself out of the CDR tool, I just reach out to Heather and Esther because it's so important to do so.